This show is part of the RetroZap.com podcast network.
This is Warp Trails, a Star Trek Discovery podcast, a RetroZap podcast network exclusive.
Welcome to Warp Trails, the RetroZap podcast network show devoted to Star Trek. Tonight, we are continuing our coverage of the second season of Discovery with our recap and review of Episode 5, Saints of Imperfection. I'm Dennis Keithley, and I'm here with my wife and co-host Beth.
Yes, I am here.
All right. Well, before we get into this week's episode, let's touch briefly on some Star Trek news. Beth, you found a story on a new Star Trek animated series. So what's going on?
Well, according to an article in Variety, there is going to be a Star Trek animated series for kids. I think we've all heard about the Below Decks animated series in the works for CBS All Access with the Rick and Morty writer. But this one, this new one, or new to me, is in the hands of some writers who were on Ninjago, Masters of Spinjitzu, and Troll Hunters, as well as crafting stories for Hotel Transylvania, the Lego movie, and the Ninjago movie. So those of us who have been slightly jealous of Star Wars' ability to really get to the next generation of potential fans, there's hope for us yet, Star Trekkers.
Yeah, I was a little surprised because this show is headed for Nickelodeon. It's yes. Not going to be on CBS All Access, which I guess surprised me in that I was thinking that they'd be putting all the Star Trek series there as kind of and trying to build out a platform that has products for all ages. But that doesn't really seem to be the case.
Not with this, but I think this is a pull-in, like, hey, my kids are really into this cartoon that is free, and now maybe I will spend the money to get CBS All Access so that they can get more Star Trek.
Yeah, I guess my only concern about that is that, well, not even a concern, just an observation, is that the original series, or I don't know about the original series, but those series are, I think they're still available on Netflix. And I'm not, you know, our kids are 14 and 11, and Discovery is kind of a PG-13 type of a show. I'm not certain I'd show it to anyone too much younger than that.
Oh, that is true, but I want all the Star Trek all the time, so I'm happy for the
news. No, I don't have any issue with this at all, and I'm perfectly happy to see more Star Trek, and I'll certainly check this out. Nowadays, these cartoons that re-envision things that we're familiar with can be really hit or miss.
That is true.
I just know from the last two iterations of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I certainly like the one that came before the one that's current now a whole lot better. And
that's true. I mean, I don't want to get too far down that rabbit hole, but yeah, you're right. It would be interesting to see how they do it. There's no information that I could find about how Star Trek was going to be, but Star Trek is a big world and there's plenty to play in.
Right. Yeah. And this is, like you said, this is really brand new information with very little to go on other than what you read, which is pretty much the entire report. So, all right, well, let's head on over to our review of Saints of Imperfection. We would remind you that this is a full spoiler review. So if you haven't seen the episode, we suggest you go check it out first if you don't want to be spoiled. And if you're still here, thanks for sticking around. And here we go. The show begins with Burnham running to engineering to see what has happened to Tilly. There's this cocoon thing that's on the floor, which yes. She was wrapped up in the previous episode.
I was gonna say that ate her in the previous episode.
Yeah, and Burnham makes a remark that Stamets isn't giving up hope of getting her back. Back on the bridge, had a lot to say, but I don't know. What did you think?
This has happened before on Discovery. I don't not mind them. This was a little more kind of, and we'll talk about this at the end of the episode, this is a little more faith-based than the science that we're used to from Star Trek. I found it an interesting way to set up the episode.
Okay. Was there something in particular that stood out to you there?
I thought it was interesting how she listed off their
her and Stamets's different identities, or rather the, you know, shipmate and
widower, how words orphan. Define who we are.
Yeah.
It was a nice touch.
I also like Stamets's stress uniform, how he opened the jacket. I like that.
Kind of remind me of Wrath of Khan, the way that they did that patch, or not the patch.
Yeah, and had
the
flap.
The flap that goes down, and it looks like a white square as opposed to an all burgundy colored uniform.
Yes.
Right.
The lobster bib.
Now, I was going to ask you, why did they change the Star Trek uniform so much for the movies? Is there a reason ever? I mean, because the original motion picture had something that was far different that was on the television show, and then they changed them up again for the Wrath of Khan. They kind of stuck with that for a while.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because they didn't do the traditional red shirts and blue for science officers and gold for command or anything like that.
Yeah, I think they always just kind of play with the uniforms. I also think that as the actors got older and their bodies changed, I mean, not everyone, but in the original series, you can sort of see how the uniform changes based on, especially Shatner's, about how Shatner was looking. I wouldn't be surprised to discover in the movies that there was comfort and other things.
We don't really have red shirts on Discovery, do we?
No, we do not.
The closest we've had is when, the science officer got killed right off the bat.
Right. Well, but and then because the security officer was wearing red and she survived.
She did. All right, well, but back to the episode. Back on the bridge, Discovery is catching up with Spock's shuttle. The shuttle tries some evasive maneuvers and attempts to detonate some of the gas in this nebula it's heading to hide itself. It works for a moment. They fly right past it. They recover, and then Pike orders that they launch a torpedo and detonate it, 100 meters or something like that before impact, which knocks the shuttle out of commission.
Right. It was enough to disable but not harm the shuttle.
Right. They pull the shuttle into the shuttle bay. So the crew of the Discovery lines up with their phasers drawn, all ready to blast Spock as he comes off the shuttle. And you asked, right as the doors were opening, which non-Vulcan is it's going to be coming down the stairs of the shuttle this time? And so you called it. It wasn't Spock.
It was not.
Philippa Georgiou emerges.
Who I have to admit, I was happier to see.
Yeah, I knew she was going to be on this episode based on the teaser we got at the end of last week's, but I was not expecting that. I was not expecting her to come down that ramp at all.
I didn't know who it was going to be. I knew it wasn't going to be Spock. One of the reasons why I knew it was not going to be Spock is pure conjecture on my part, but they said that there was one life sign aboard, and Star Trek is able to... They could have said, and it is Vulcan.
Yeah.
And they didn't. And I was like, yep, nope.
Well, and it's just, they even went with the same angle of closing in on Burnham's reaction. You know, when we saw Sarek, and then when we saw Amanda, and, you know, it's just it's not who she's expecting it to be.
Right.
And, you know, so they've pulled that on us three times now. So, you know. Fool us once, shame on you. Fool us twice, shame on me. Fool us three times,
and they haven't done that yet.
You called it. So anyway, so she's there, and they kind of pull her into, I don't know if it was Pike's ready room or somewhere on the ship, and they contact Leyland, who's in charge of Section 31, because as they're on the way to that room, she shows them her badge, which is the black Section 31 Starfleet badge.
Yes.
And, you know, so they get into this discussion. Pike is not happy about this at all. And so they talk to Leyland, and Georgiou is needed elsewhere and it's too important. So they're not going to leave her, and they're going to send some of their liaison.
Right.
And Burnham goes ahead and starts escorting Georgiou back to the shuttle, and they kind of have it out in the hallway.
Yeah.
And Burnham threatens her, you know, starts to threaten her, that, you know, if you harm my brother Spock, you know, and she, Georgiou had picked up this apple and was crunching it as a point of emphasis during the conversation between Pike and Leyland, and she just drops it. So I don't know. I know we both loved that scene as we were watching it, especially when Burnham said something to the effect, you know, go back to your den of snakes, and Georgiou hisses at her.
A relaxed Emperor Georgiou, who is not fearful for her life all the time, is one of the joys of the series.
Yeah.
I mean, she's evil. She's manipulative. She's, but she's great.
You know, it's interesting characterization because I kind of feel like they were watering down the evilness of her over the course of this episode. We'll kind of get to some of that.
Right. And maybe you're right. Maybe evil isn't fair. She is still.
But how can you trust her? I think is the
point. You cannot trust her. Or I guess to, you know, to quote or to misquote Sparrow, she's dishonest. And so you can trust her to always be dishonest and manipulative.
That's true. And she completely comes off as creepy at the beginning of this episode.
And she enjoys it and so much.
It changes as we get through this one, but we'll get to those in due time. So Georgia can't stay on Discovery, and so they're going to get this new liaison from Section 31.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's Ash Tyler.
Of course it is.
And I loved Burnham's reaction when she saw him sitting there. Was it the mess hall? He's sitting there at this table. She starts to walk in, and she turns around. It's just like, you got to be kidding me.
Well, and she's had a day, because she'd already rolled her eyes several times at Georgiou. Pike is pretty sure that something is going on, that he's the only one who doesn't know what's going on, which is not inaccurate.
And, well, yeah. I loved that scene.
It was a good scene.
Him. And that, you know, he points out that I don't know you that well, but I can't remember. It's like, I know you. I don't know you that well, but I do know you enough to know that, you know, your reaction to Georgiou and then this one to Tyler, you know, the former torchbearer, who had left, who had murdered a member, an officer of this crew, and then went to Kronos, and Burnham was surprised to see him. And so he's like, you know, he wanted to know what was going on.
Which is fair.
And he started to press Burnham. And to his credit, he accepts it when she says, that is a longer story for another time. And I'm asking you to bear with me.
Right.
And he said, okay. And so I kind of like that. You know, if this was season one, obviously Lorca was from the Terran Empire. And so, you know, we wouldn't have had that same conversation go the same way. But there was just levels of distrust built on distrust. And this season, it's trust built upon trust, I think.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting. And I think it shows how Discovery is different from other Star Trek shows. Mm-hmm. That the final scene of the episode was not Burnham going to talk to Pike.
Right. Right. And to finish this scene off.
Yeah, sorry.
It's okay.
I'm jumping ahead.
Burnham does stand up for Ash. And says that he's a good man, but yeah. That was Vok that killed Dr. Culber in season one. But that's kind of a hard sell.
It was, and I appreciated very much that Pike was like, yeah, no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, he wasn't there. But so, again, they're trying to figure out what to do about Tilly being missing. And Stamets deduces that Tilly's in the mycelial network because there's no human DNA in this cocoon.
Right.
That they've got there. And so he presents a plan on the bridge to get her back. And they're going to do essentially half of a jump into the mycelial network. Because as he explains it, whenever they would do these jumps from the network, they were there for just milliseconds. You know, they'd actually enter the network and then appear someplace else. But this time, they're going to kind of jump part of the way into it and then not leave.
Right. So Pike describes it as using the Discovery as a doorstop between the two.
Right. And in the middle of explaining this plan, Burnham and Ash show up on the bridge. And the look on Stamets' face, because he's standing up in front of the bridge.
Yeah, doing a presentation for Tilly. And the credit, that was a well-acted scene. Rapp deserves all the points in the world for that.
The acting in this episode was amazing.
Yeah, it was good.
That, just the stunned disbelief on his face. And you could tell, you know, he's in the middle of making this presentation. Then he sees Ash and just the, wait a minute, what is going on here? Expression on his face. And then him trying to wrap his mind around that. You could just see all the thoughts.
Right, and then pull back into like, okay, this is about Tilly right now.
Yeah, and then he gets back into it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, kudos to Rapp for that one. So he's got this plan. They're going to do, as we said, they're going to do this micro jump that's kind of, as you said, a doorstop between the two. And then that's going to buy about an hour's worth of time. And
Because the spores are going to start eating the hull.
Right. And you know, Pike is like, he says, you know, this is crazy. But again, as we were saying, he trusts Stamets.
He does.
In this one. And, you know.
And he trusts and he likes Tilly. And
exactly.
And he is Starfleet.
So he hails the entire crew and says, you know, in Starfleet, there's this promise. There's this contract that no one gets left behind. And everyone on the bridge is like, you know, Tilly would do this for us.
Yeah.
And so we're going to do it for her. So they're going forward with the plan. So that means that everyone has to evacuate to the starboard side of the ship.
Right, because that's the part that's not going to be in the network.
And everyone else is going to be in the port side of the ship. And Stamets is talking about how he's going to go into the network and find Tilly. But Burnham's like, are you crazy? I'm going with you. There's no way you're going alone.
And again, I hate to cross the streams again, but how much was that a Return of the Jedi scene? With Han Solo like, we will join you on your quest to Endor.
Yeah, but it is the
I mean, it was the Star Trek version of it, but I was just like, and where's Luke? He'll join you as well.
Yeah, it also reminded me of the Search for Spock when the entire crew stepped up to help Kirk get McCoy. You know,
steal a starship.
Just steal the starship and go look for Spock. And it's like, you know, they weren't going to leave a member of the family behind.
Well, and that's definitely, I mean, not leaving a member of the family behind is a very Star Trek theme.
Right. So they do it, you know, but they make this jump. They're halfway in and out. They've got about an hour. And as soon as they get there, the spores start in on the ship.
Yeah.
Burnham and Stamets went into the cube. I was kind of thinking of it as the airlock between the two dimensions.
Yeah, and Stamets later says that. And I think that's a really good way to think of it.
Right. So we kind of skipped over a few of the scenes between Tilly and May, and I'm kind of going to consolidate them here a little bit. But
yeah.
Tilly wakes up inside the cocoon, and she pulls herself out and freaks out.
Yeah. She kind of pulls out. May sort of pulls her out. It's gross.
Yeah. And all the credit to Mary Wiseman. I mean, you talk about incredible acting. The job she does selling that, the panic and the terror.
And when she tells May that she's going to, like, when she gets through with this, she's going to, like, hold on to the anger and she's going to, like, bury it inside and let it fester. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, she really, she is not pleased about this at all. But summarizing, May brought her here because there is a monster in the network that chases a Discovery every time it goes through. The mycelial network.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, so let's pause there for a second. We got the impression, or at least I got the impression over the past two episodes, that Discovery was destroying the network and this entire ecosphere whenever it entered, to the fact that it was like almost irreparable harm.
Right.
But now it seems like they're changing the story, that there's this monster there and somehow Discovery's responsible for it. And so they need someone to destroy the monster. And, you know, we'll hold back on the reveal of the monster for just a second.
Sure.
But am I alone in that impression? Or do you feel like we kind of got a different take on what was actually going on?
I believe May changed up her story. Now, whether that is because to her it's all the same,
mm-hmm.
that the monster is chasing Discovery, and therefore every time Discovery comes through, there is damage. And so the way May looks at it, there's more detail, and she never... But I felt May misled Tilly, but I
see,
could also
you're being
see...
very generous about this. in my opinion, I kind of feel... This is my objection to the season. As much as I'm enjoying it, I think season two so far is superior to season one. You know, they've teased us about Spock, and here we are through five episodes and we haven't seen him.
Yeah, we're never going to see Spock.
Then we were told this story two episodes ago, and it was kind of altered a little bit. You know, it was Discovery was going through the network, and it was kind of chewing up the network and destroying the environment when it did.
Yep.
Last episode it was, you've destroyed our environment, so I'm getting revenge.
Yep.
And this episode it is, no, there's a monster in our environment, and it chases you every time you go through. I need you to do something about it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's because three different people wrote these three different episodes, but in my opinion, this should have been sorted out in the writer's room, and we should have got a little bit more consistent between the three episodes.
My issue with May and Tilly is going to, like, put a pin in that, because when we get to the end...
Yeah,
I have thoughts.
There's an issue there too. You're right. But anyway, so there we are. That's the current version of the story, that there's some sort of a monster that is destroying the Jacet, is what they call themselves.
Mm-hmm.
There. And it doesn't take long. You know, Tilly wakes up and all of a sudden the spores start trying to eat her.
And that, again, points to acting. That clearly hurts.
Yeah. And then Mae says, knock it off. She talks to the spores and says, you know, she's here to help us out.
Right.
That's, I brought her here. And so the spores leave. Anyway, so going forward, there is this, you know, another kind of important thing that slipped by me the first time I watched this episode is that Tilly is, you know, they're amongst all the spores and the fungi, as they call them. And then there's these black trees sticking out. She goes to grab one and May's like, don't touch that. It's poisonous.
Right.
And it was, at the time, the first time I watched it, it seemed like kind of a throwaway thing. But the second time, with the benefit of hindsight, it was absolutely
important. Yeah, I'm beginning to learn there is no throw. After the Saru and the 94 languages, there are seems to be no throwaways in Discovery.
You know, it's like it's kind of hard to watch Discovery. It's like I said, as much as I'm enjoying it, it's that the first time, I'm just trying to absorb the story. But there, these episodes are so heavy with details that it's hard to absorb everything on that first viewing. And you really have to go to a second, go through. You can enjoy the story without getting into all the details. But time through, it's like, oh, that's what you were talking that went over my head, you know,
right.
You know, 100 miles an hour as we were going through this episode. So anyway, so, there, you know, remember the trees. They're toxic to the Jacet. Before long, Discovery shows up because their little micro jump worked. And Tilly looks at them and says, well, that's for me.
Which I liked because they were saying that Pike says in his speech, she, you know, we owe it to her. She would expect us to come after her. And then as soon as she sees the hull, she goes, that's for me.
Yeah. And it makes obvious. What else would it be doing there?
Yeah, no, for sure. But it was like, okay, yeah, cool.
Right. And there it is, you know, gigantic portion of ship sticking right there in the middle of the network. But so they start to head towards it. But May is getting distressed because she thinks Tilly's going to abandon her. And falling back onto Tilly's history with the real May, you know, they do, that's what I was assuming it was. I'm maybe reading in things like that, but they do a pinky swear, which seems very much like something you would expect out of late elementary school, early junior high. Type of an age group that, you know, it's like, you know, pinky swear that I'm not going to abandon you, that I'll help you out with this.
And then Tilly makes May, I don't think in the same moment, but Tilly also gets the promise from May that if Tilly helps, May will return Tilly to Discovery.
That's true. Yeah. I loved May's reaction. It was like, what are you doing with that tiny finger?
Yes.
And so Tilly has to form May's pinky into the, so they can do the finger link for the pinky swear. That was a nice little comedic moment. But Burnham and Stamets, they emerge from the cube inside Discovery and they start exploring. They quickly discover a human life form.
And this is important. They discover one human life form under the heading of there are no little throwaways. That was an important line.
Yeah, that's a good point. And they doesn't take long. They come across Tilly and May and they, you know, point their weapons at May and Tilly's like, no, wait, stop.
Right.
It's okay. She's with me. And they explain the situation that Tilly has agreed to help find this monster.
And I liked the moment between Tilly and Michael when Tilly says, thank you for coming to get me. I thought it was sweet.
Yeah. Again, it's a far cry from last season. Now, you know, in the last season, Tilly was perfectly willing to be friends and she kind of took Burnham under her wing to try and make her at home on Discovery.
Right.
Because, you know, Tilly was a little bit of an outcast even then because she was a little socially awkward. Yeah. She was a cadet. At the time, she wasn't even an ensign. And so she went out of her way to become friends with Michael, who was not looking for any friends.
Exactly.
You know, after she'd been sentenced to life imprisonment. And, you know, now Michael is she commander or lieutenant commander? It doesn't matter. But she's got this superior rank and Tilly's an ensign. And they're still roommates on the ship. And so it's that's just kind of a statement on how far their relationship has come as Burnham's Vulcan upbringing has crumbled. And she's kind of accepted more of her humanity, you know, that she cares for everyone as a, you know, last week we saw it was Saru. This week we see it with Tilly.
Right.
But so they're going to track down this monster. Stamets and Burnham, not so many words, agree to help. But then May points out the evidence that the monster is there because we got all this bark from this tree.
Yeah.
And May explains that this monster uses the bark to attack them. And it was at that point, I was like, wait a minute, doesn't seem right.
And it was also pretty much, and I can't remember exactly what the line is, but as soon as there's basically like, let's go find the monster, you hear a voice.
Yeah, it's moaning.
Yeah, like you're like, I mean, you know there's more to it because there's always more to it, but you're like, okay.
Yeah, the reveal here was a surprise to me. I did not see this coming.
Which is wild. I didn't either. In fact, when they show him, I'm like, who's that?
Yeah, and we still have one thing we need to get to before that.
True. Sorry.
But so on Discovery, things aren't going well in the real universe, our universe.
That's true.
The ship is sinking further into the mycelial network. Now, this was a clever special effect. The Discovery looks like it's sinking in an ocean.
Yeah,
because it looks like it's
really a cool effect,
and it really looks like it's the ship is. It's looked like if it was a nautical vessel, it capsized and it was slowly sinking to water, and so Ash hits his badge,
yes,
and calls for Leland and Section 31 to come help,
and this boulder flies past
asteroid,
yeah. Flies past,
comes out of warp,
decloaks, and it's this badass ship.
Yeah, it's the Section 31 ship we saw at the end of the third episode of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And I that Georgiou and them left on Cronus on.
And there was a line at the end.
Okay, well,
I have a theory.
I'm going to have to ask you about that because I have questions about that. So, one, the communicator.
Yep.
It's not the look flip out.
And the look on Pike's face.
What was that? What just happened?
On several levels.
So, what about that? What is it that Section 31 gets all the cool toys that the rest of Starfleet can't have?
Well, do we want to skip to the end? Because,
No.
Leland, when they talk about the tachyon at the end,
uh-huh.
Leland says, that's a sign of time travel.
Or cloaking. Or
right, and Pike's
Pike or transporter.
And I get Section 31,
yeah.
But that's the first place he went.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm like, oh. Are you?
Yeah. Okay. We're getting too vague.
Let's put a pin in that
and we'll come back to it.
But I think they meant in black it.
Yeah,
I think
definitely.
That's how they pay for themselves.
So the communications device has caught Pike off guard and everybody else. And then, it was an asteroid that came out of warp and it and then the asteroid dissolves and we have a starship.
Badass looking ship.
Yeah. And it's the same one that we saw from, at the end of the Cronus episode.
Yes.
And so that is the Section 130. You know, that was an interesting, we didn't comment on the time, but that was an interesting, but they showed us the ship upside down and then the camera angle flipped.
Yep.
And this time we got it from the same way over. So the saucer section is on top. It's got the nacelles that fold up kind of like Voyager.
Yes.
And it looks way more advanced than anything else. So we got a thing going there with the technology.
Yeah.
But then they use some tractor beam drones. They attach to Discovery and then the drones themselves tractor onto the ship as opposed to the reverse. The ship tractoring Discovery.
Which I would think is a lot less damaging to both the ship and whatever you're trying to tractor.
Mm-hmm. But it seems to be drawing on the power from the ship. Because what is the name of the ship? It's the Section 31 ship.
We're just going to call it the Section 31 ship.
Right, so the Section 31 ship is beginning to lose power, and Leland wants to cut ties and run, which is, okay, interesting dichotomy, because Discovery's all in on risking everything to rescue one crew member.
Right.
And meanwhile, Section 31 has a ship full of people that are on the verge of perishing, and Leland's like, cut the line.
Sorry, dude.
Let's go. They aren't living up to the Starfleet promise at all.
Nope.
But Georgiou's there. After we were just told that she's needed elsewhere and is going to be going someplace else, she's aboard this ship and blackmails Leland.
This was... So she basically is like, no, we're going to do this and we're going to give him 3 more minutes. Yeah. And Leland's like, that's you're not in charge and that's court-martial offense. And she's like, yeah, bring it.
Yeah, she says, well, you know, if anyone knew what you did about killing the wrong ambassador 6 years ago, and he's like, well, that's a minor offense, even if you could prove it. She said, well, you could easily prove it if you could find the evidence that you hid behind your firewall.
Yeah, it was like...
I love her. I bring on the Section 31 show.
I want it now.
I need more Michelle Yao in Star Trek.
Oh, she is... I hope she is having as much fun as... the vibe that I get from her that she's having. Because if that is true, the Section 31 show will go on forever and it will be a joy.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, so they've momentarily come up with another fix for this. So back on in the engineering section of Discovery, it's not the engineering section, but they discover the monster. And it is Dr. Culver.
He's not a monster.
He's perceived as a monster.
I understand.
Because he's using this bark to protect himself.
Yes.
And the Jacet can't digest him. And so
I can't imagine why he wouldn't want to be digested.
I mean, it was until he points out to May, it's like, well, in his view, you're the monster. You're trying to eat him.
Yes. And I mean, he looks terrible. He's clearly injured. He is scared.
He's been stuck there for months.
Oh, yeah. No, he's a mess.
And so there's some, at first, there's some doubt as to whether it's actually him.
Right.
But Stamets, of course, wants to believe, he gets over the doubt the quickest.
Of course.
He realizes, well, I saw you here. And so it could be you. And I had this conversation. And then it dawns on everyone that it actually is Dr. Culber. So they're going to try and bring him back.
Yes.
And they convince him. It's like, look, we can bring you back to the engineering section. You can get inside the cube. It's, as we've been describing it, the airlock. It'll get you from the mycelial network back into our galaxy. And so Stamets goes into the cube and he's jumping back and forth between dimensions, and he grabs Culver's arm and tries to pull it through. Well, it disappears.
Oh, it was so sad. Because I'm not going to let you skip over that moment date. That was so sweet. That's my favorite couple. But as Stamets is trying to convince, which I like, Culver's like, you're not real. And Stamets is like, yes, I am. And he talks about how on their third date, Hugh took Stamets to MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art, and Culver was so excited that he was just walking ahead and everything, and just put his hand back to grab Stamets's hand, and Stamets is like, "And I knew everything I needed to know in that moment, and you have to trust me now."
Yeah, he called back onto a shared experience to convince Culver that he was who he said he was.
So sweet.
Yeah. So happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day. Read that. Watch that on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, it came out just in time. So at this point, Culber's like, well, you're going to have to go. I have to stay behind. I can't go with you, Paul.
And he's like taking off the bark. He's going to let the...
And the spores are starting to
eat him. Oh, and he turns red and he's...
And then they also, before they even got to that point, May called spores to attack Tilly so she could get Tilly's phaser rifle. She was about ready to shoot Culber, but Tilly said, wait, back off. And, that's where the whole, in his view, you're the monster. He's where,
right.
Because it was Burnham that figured out that he was using this tree bark as armor.
Yeah.
To protect himself.
And Tilly's like, oh, you can't kill him. It'll destroy you. And I was like, what in your shared experience leads you to that conclusion?
Yeah. Yeah. And this was kind of, as much as I love this episode, this was kind of the clumsy part.
This was really clumsy.
There's a lot of things that I think you kind of have to put together yourself on this one. And I don't believe for a second Culber was attacking anybody as much as he was dropping tree bark, poisonous, toxic tree bark all over the place.
Yes.
Because he was trying to defend himself, and Burnham figured out, but it was weird the way she did so, because I'm not certain she really had enough to go by. It was quite a leap of logic.
There was several leaps. Yes. And, sure.
It's easy to forgive. She's done that several times over the course of the season. And a lot of them were, you could buy, because you could see that logic. I mean, it's not the logic path I would have followed, but it makes sense the way she gets down it.
That is such a Star Trek trope though. The Vulcan who seems to only need half the information in order to get it right. I mean, that's on every single almost version of it.
Right. So, and again, talk about some good acting. Stamets is reacting poorly to this notion that he's going to have to lose Culber a second time. And, without even saying anything, the look he gives and the shaking of his head, you could see the anguish on his face.
Oh, and how Culver's like sending him off you are so committed to life
and creation.
And I love you in creation, and I love you for it.
Of all the hundreds of reasons to love you, this is the reason that's mine. Don't take that from me. Very poetic.
Find someone who loves you the way Hugh loves Paul.
But then Tilly gets it. She figures it out.
Yes.
Which is, you know, a big theme, and I feel bad that we kind of skipped over it earlier, was this notion of the first law of thermodynamics. That the universe doesn't waste anything. It doesn't destroy energy. It just converts it to some other form that it can be used elsewhere.
Yes.
And so the explanation as to how Culber got here in the first place was when Stamets was in that state where he was kind of trapped between worlds. His physical body was in our galaxy. Mentally, he was stuck in the network. Is when he Ash snapped Culber's neck.
Right.
And Stamets found him, and when he was embracing him, his body, before Ash was dead, he somehow brought over that energy, his life force, or whatever.
Yeah, so Paul brings Hugh into the
mycelial network. But
not his body.
But not his body. His body is made up of the matter that is from the mycelial network, and that's why he can't cross back. Because as Tilly points out, I can't exist in your galaxy. I can only exist inside your head.
Right.
When she's talking to Tilly. So then Tilly figures it out, which is, well, we still have this cocoon, which is kind of like your version of the portal of getting from the mycelial network into our galaxy. And since there's no body in that, you could take Culber's DNA, put it in there, and then he could emerge in our galaxy.
Right.
This is complicated. This is
asking a lot of...
They ground it in traditional physics with the first law of thermodynamics, and that, you know, there's no... Energy's not destroyed. It converts it to matter, and matter converts back to energy and stuff like that. But from there, they take a leap that is just...
Magic is just science that you don't understand yet. Yeah, I'm like...
Hey, I'm not going to complain about
Hugh
it
back.
Because,
yeah.
You know, it does work. We get Dr. Culber back this way. And he shows up very clean cut. He's got a haircut.
Yeah.
And it was a nice moment. I didn't catch this the first time I watched it. But when he wakes up back on the Discovery, because the Discovery does then pull out of, you know, once they come back, they pull out of the network just in time. And, Hugh looks up at Stamets and to Miles Paul, but we don't get any volume to that. So it's like, you know, there's this, yes, it's me, you know, I'm glad to see you type of thing. And this is what you were alluding to earlier, that May is reluctant to go with this plan because, and then she's formed this connection with Tilly and that she's been inside her head and they've got this bond that you couldn't possibly replicate elsewhere.
I'm calling it. I don't believe it. No. Secondly, the only way I am willing to... I'm certainly not willing to accept that somehow these two have some magical emotional connection. Tilly and May have barely exchanged a civil word the entire time they've been together.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you're going to give Tilly all the credit in the land for being the most forgiving person in the universe and the fact that she has been taken over and kidnapped is okay.
Mm-hmm.
No. So my only thought on this is that for some reason, May cannot return to her spore form anymore. So she is stuck in that body in the spore network. And that was what she was saying her problem was.
But I didn't even think that was it.
I don't think that was it either. I think it was we can't talk anymore.
Tilly's response was like, well, I didn't want to say it because it was going to sound weird.
Yeah.
And so
I was like, yes, it does sound weird.
You know, I don't even know how to explain this. The best I can do is just that it is while they don't like what they've done to each other or it's happened, it is a connection that is just, you can't explain unless you've experienced it, maybe. Be that as it may, they end with another pinky swear that, you know, they will figure out some way to get back into contact.
Well, that was interesting because because what Tilly says is, I believe the universe will find a way to bring us together.
Mm-hmm.
And May makes her pinky promise to that. Mm-hmm. I was like, "What? So, fine. I mean, I'll pinky promise to that. As long as you believe that is true, you've kept your promise. But I didn't
Yeah, it was not my favorite part of the episode, but there it is.
No.
So they get back, and, you know, the mission was successful. We're not done yet, though.
No, we are not.
Pike beams over to the Section 31 ship.
Because he is pissed. Oh, he's so angry.
Yeah, and Admiral Cornwall is there.
Yes.
And she basically says, you two are going to have to get over this. Because Leyland and Pike they go way back to the Academy, and they, you know, they've had this falling out. I'm not certain what it is over, other than Leyland is a member of Section 31, and he's got something. He knows something that Pike resents. But there seems to be, I couldn't tell if it was an allusion to what happened, that somehow they were present in the first episode with things that were going on in the Hiawatha. And maybe they were cloaked there as part of, it was one of the asteroids or something.
I don't know.
But, you know, there was, Pike forgives him. Because, you know, Leyland apologized and Pike says it's accepted. And I acknowledge that your path isn't as clear as mine.
Right.
And so they're going to work together because Cornwall says, you know, there's only one person who understands what's going on. That's Lieutenant Spock. I need you two to work together to find him.
Right.
And that's what Pike wants, is he wants to find Spock. So he agrees that they'll work together. But I'm having a hard time putting my finger on exactly where the falling out was in the relationship all these years ago.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's just they've gone down different paths and, like, the impression I've gotten is maybe there wasn't one set experience, but they've gone down different paths, and Pike's like, Leyland, you can be better, and Leyland is like, Pike, you are so naive. But I don't know. Maybe,
but
we'll
it seemed like
more.
They were referring to something, because point for the apology then? I mean, just because we disagree, that doesn't mean, you know, anyone owes each other an apology. So, anyways, it is what it is. Well, maybe we'll find out later. But then to finish things off, Burnham gets a call from Georgiou.
The savior of the Discovery.
And if she had rolled her eyes any harder, she would have given herself a concussion.
Oh my gosh. I was afraid that our son was going to take notes, because I already think he can roll his eyes, but.
Yes. But, Burnham says, you know, put it into the science lab. And so she goes in there and there's a hologram of Georgiou. The gist of the conversation is that Burnham's reluctant to accept that Georgiou might be acting altruistically, and that she believes that Georgiou is going to want some sort of a favor in return. And Georgiou points out, it's like, look, I've had your life in my hands a dozen times, and I could have snuffed it out at any point, and I haven't.
Right.
And so Georgiou is trying to convince her, at least my take on this, is that she generally cares, and that, you know, she's no longer the Terran Empire, so perhaps she does have a motive, you know, cause she likes Starfleet. You know, she made that
I think
point.
She's having fun in Starfleet.
Yeah, she's made that. And, you know, when there was all this stats about, you know, earlier in the episode that, you know, Georgiou remarks to Burnham that, you know, Pike doesn't know who I am. And, you know, and then, you know, Burnham says, well, I'm sworn, you know, under orders not to talk about this. And, you know, Georgiou says, well, I do my best work right out in the open.
Right. She's like, eyes have eyes. And yeah, because when Burnham's like, well, I'm under orders. Georgiou basically was like, yeah, and how long is that going to last?
Right.
Orders.
But so this is unfinished business here they had the mirror universe. Georgiou and Burnham had a relationship, you know, mother-daughter type of thing. And I think that's kind of carrying over, because they had they were ruthless over there. And in our galaxy, Georgiou and Burnham had a mother-daughter type of captain, first officer type relationship here. And so they're having the problems reconciling that now, is the best I have on this. And so it's unfinished business. Burnham's got a lot of unfinished business with the relationships in her life. She started putting those together. We saw what happened with Saru. Now we've seen what's going on with Tilly. And so this is going to happen as well. You know, we got an upcoming conversation between her and Pike about who Georgiou is going. That wasn't in this episode.
Yep. So do you believe that Georgiou wants to find Spock before the Starfleet Cowboys do?
I think so.
I mean, I think she wants to achieve her mission, but
I'm wondering if it's one of these cases where she has a directive, which is to find Spock and what's going on. However, if you can't get this resolved, you know, by any means necessary, prevent these signals from harming the Federation, and if that means killing Spock, kill Spock. And so I think her motive might be, her initial motive might be in the best interest, but she's also willing to, if it takes killing Spock, she'd be willing to do so, or Burnham would not.
Right. But I also think Georgiou is like, sometimes you need to kill people, and if Spock... Well, I mean, seriously.
It's Tuesday.
I think the way she looks at it is, you know, everyone's saying, well, Spock didn't do this, and I don't think Spock did this, you know, killed the doctors. But I think from Georgiou's point of view, it's like, sometimes you gotta kill doctors, and if you gotta kill doctors...
Yeah.
I don't think it's that big of a deal to her.
All right. Well, that kind of brings us up to the end of the episode, and we're starting to run long here. One thing I wanted to ask real quick. I get the feeling that Pike is only around for this season of Discovery, and then we will get some new captain, because that's what they were on their way to do. They're on the Water to Vulcan to get their captain at the end of the last season.
He has to go back to the Enterprise.
Yeah, and Pike needs to go back to the Enterprise. And that's where I was going with this question.
Okay.
I would love to see an Enterprise show with Pike, you know, Rebecca Romijn is number one, and the engineering officer that we've got, and some of these other, I bring that on.
Yeah.
Would you be interested in that?
I would, for sure. Yeah, as long as they were careful with the, you know, contingency. But I've read some of the novels, and I think there are comic books where Pike, I think there is Star Trek history in air quotes with Pike as the captain that I'm not super familiar with. So while I would love to see it, I don't know how viable it is.
Well, I guess my response to that would be is that they've already proven with Discovery that they're willing to completely wipe out anything that happened in an Italian novel. And
oh, that's certainly true.
And so I can't see them being beholden to any book or comic that's come before if it gets in the way of them writing a TV show around it. But yes. Anyways, I don't know. I just,
who are imperfect saints?
Well, that kind of is, that describes most of the major players.
Everyone.
Georgiou, Leyland, certainly, Stamets and Tilly and May. I think it's most of the key players in this episode. Ash?
Oh, Ash. He's got issues.
He's not... Eh, he wasn't particularly saint-like. But I think those... How about you? What do you think?
I think Georgiou is definitely an imperfect saint. I think Stamets isn't always, but was in this episode. And certainly Culver was.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well... let's go ahead and wrap this up then. So that's going to conclude our discussion of Saints of Imperfection. We'll be back soon with another Star Trek discussion of Discovery. Before we go, Beth, where can our listeners find us?
Well, we can be reached on Twitter at Warp Trails, on Instagram and Facebook at Warp Trails Pod, and we can also be reached by email at warptrails@retrozap.com. We're also on the Warp Trails Discord channel off of Retrozap, if you're interested in that. Is it in the notes? How do they find
it? You can go to retrozap.com, and there's a link for it right there on the homepage, and you can find it there. And we've been chatting there. There's been a lot more discussion than a lot of the other channels and the general conversation. A lot of Dune casting that's going on. People are getting excited about that. It's been generating a lot of conversation.
Oh, yeah, the new movie. Yeah. Is there anyone who's not in that other than, like, me?
It's got quite the cast.
Wow.
Yeah, and so, you know, that's been big. You know, as episode 9 of Star Wars is coming to, you know, we're getting closer to that there, you know, and celebration, Star Wars celebration is coming up. There's a lot of discussion going on around that. The Techno Retro Dads channel is really good for a lot of, retro discussion of things going on in the '80s. There was quite an awesome Thundercats discussion that just happened there.
But if you're one of the Star Trek fans who did not like this episode for all of the, it's a little too magic and not enough science fiction, I would love to chat with you about that on the Discord channel. I know completely where you're coming from. This was Valentine's Day and there was lots of love and it made me happy.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, our show is part of the Retrozap Podcast Network. You can head over to retrozap.com for other great podcasts, such as the Deucecast Movie Show, Star Wars shows such as Brews and Blasters, Beltway Banthas, and Kanata's Castle, the superhero suite of Green Justice, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, and Scarlet Velocity. There's Dork Lair for collectors, Techno Retro Dads for the 70s and 80s fans, Animaniacs, the Dune Cast, We Know Nothing for Game of Thrones fans, and the Ardcast for those of you that like video games. Also, RetroZap is the home of my Star Wars podcast with Dark Taxis and Jay Krebs, which is Starship Sabers and Scoundrels. Our theme music is Wasp from Faces by Misha Dixon, which is available on the Free Music Archive. So thanks for joining us, everyone. Live long and prosper, and we will talk to you next time.
Get out of here and execute your insane plans.